The journey lasted about 2 days, or up here, 2 waking and sleeping cycles. I was all of a sudden ready to get back to work. The journey from Sambal to the Sledgeport had been a welcome respite from reading and thinking, but seeing Jessery had shocked me awake. I might be sleeping 12 hours at a time and watching Spielies, but my friends were working as hard as ever and going off on dangerous missions. It was difficult for me to act on this, though. The continuous vibration and occasional jarring shifts of the sledge train were about as far as you could get from the cloister. Reading and writing were difficult. Even watching Spielies was hardly worth it. Going outside was out of the question. I could understand why so many people up here were substance abusers. Before we had departed, Saman had done research on how to sneak across the border without documents. Economic migrants did this all the time, and some of them had logged their experiences, which gave me a rough idea of what and what not to do. The most important thing not to do was to ride the sledge train the whole way. Apparently, the sledge port on the other side was a much more fastidious operation than the one we had passed through. Officials would board the train at an outpost, a couple of degrees north of the port, and make a sweep down the length of the train during the last few hours of the journey. You could try to hide from them, but this was chancy. Instead, illegals tended to jump off of the train just short of the outpost and make deals with local sledgemen who would spirit them past the border post. These came in 2 categories. The older, more established smugglers had bigger, long-haul sledge trains that they would drive over the mountains to the icebound coast a couple of 100 miles away. There was also a newer breed using small, nimble, short-range snow machines just to circumvent the sledge port itself. We were hoping to get me on one of those, but the little ones couldn't operate in foul weather. Of course, all of this smuggling could have been stopped if the secular power had been serious about doing so, but it seemed they were willing to look the other way as long as illegals showed them the courtesy of being a little bit sneaky. Because of the cousins jamming the nav satellites, we could not know our latitude, but we could guess how far we had come by dead reckoning. When we thought we were getting close, I put on all the warm stuff I had and topped off the fuel bladder in my suit sack. The backpack I'd been issued at Voca was too small, too new, and too nice-looking, but Yule said he had an old one in his fetch that was bigger, with a metal frame. So we bundled ourselves up and made our way back over the catwalks to the flatbed in the rear. Our backs were to the wind, but we staggered and flailed as the sledges bucked over ridges in the ice. We had to shovel 3 feet of snow off his vehicle. More snow began to fall while we were doing this, and at times it seemed to come down faster than we could get rid of it. But eventually we got into the back of Yule's fetch and found an old military backpack that wouldn't be too conspicuous in the company I'd soon be keeping. I transferred the contents of my little rucksack into it. We filled the remaining volume with energy bars, spare clothes, and other odds and ends, and strapped a pair of snowshoes to the sides, just in case. Back at the head of the train, Gunnell supplied me with coins, enough to pay for passage if I haggled, not enough to stain me as rich. Saman printed out a map of the region around the sledge port. Cord gave me a hug and a smack on the cheek. I went out on the catwalk, pulled the fake fur fringe of my hood out to shield my face from wind blast, and looked out the left side of the train. Like a litter of cubs following their mother, 3 much smaller sledge trains were now shadowing us on that side. They had materialized out of the storm in the last quarter of an hour. Each consisted of a tracked snowcrawler drawing a few sledges behind it. Some of those sledges were open boxes or flatbeds. These were for smuggling goods, and indeed one was now being laden. It had pulled alongside the 3rd sledge in our train, and men were throwing boxes and kicking gravid bags down into it. Others, though, were covered. Tents had been pitched on their backs. I spied a couple of men in orange suit sacks vaulting down into one of those. Saman had given me 1 guideline and 2 rules. The guideline? Get on a sledge with lots of other passengers. There's safety in numbers. Rule 1. Don't let your feet touch the surface. You'll be abandoned and you'll die. Rule 2. I'll get to presently. Gunnell and I paced the catwalks for a quarter of an hour, hoping to see something smaller than these 3 trains. Tiny as they might have seemed next to the giant sledge train, they were quite a bit bigger than most vehicles you'd see on a road down south. They were probably bound west over the mountains. We did not see any of the smaller, more agile vehicles that made short-range smuggling runs in the vicinity of the sledge port. None of them was out today, probably because of the foul weather. One sharp-eyed sledgeman spied me. He gunned his engine, coughing out a roil of black exhaust, and pulled alongside. He had only one sledge behind his crawler. He slid his window open and stuck his ruddy, hairy face out and quoted a price. I walked back a few steps so that I could look into his sledge. Empty. He quoted a lower price before I said a word. It didn't feel right to jump into the first one that came along, so I shook my head, turned away, and headed back towards where a larger train was taking on passengers. This operation seemed more professional, if that word made any sense here, but I'd arrived late. The sledges were already crowded with what looked like organized bands of migrants whose stares suggested I wouldn't be welcome. And the price was high. A third, smaller train of mixed cargo and passenger sledges looked more promising. There were enough passengers aboard that I didn't fear being abandoned. Seeing me and a couple of other singletons in negotiations with the driver of that train, the first sledge man swooped in again. He pulled ahead so that I could look in through the flaps of the tent on his sledge and see that he had taken on two passengers. The door of his crawler was hanging open so I could see his control panel. A glowing screen was mounted above it, showing a jagged trace that scrolled horizontally as we moved. A sonic. Rule 2 was that I should never entrust myself to a sledge that lacked one. It used sound waves to probe the ice ahead for hidden crevasses. Most crevasses could be bridged by the tractor's long treads, but some might swallow it and everything in train behind it.